Good morning. It's Tuesday, August 5th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, ICE agents turn to smashing through car windows to make arrests. The tiny nation that makes your jeans declares a state of disaster over U.S. tariffs, and a pickpocket ring led by some very clever monkeys. But first, to a major political showdown playing out in Texas that could shape the midterms and even the way future elections are fought. In recent days, Texas Governor Greg Abbott has been trying to deliver on President Trump's demands to redraw Texas's congressional map in a way that would help Republicans pick up seats in time for the midterms. On Monday, there was a scheduled vote on the issue, and it needed a minimum number of state lawmakers present, but more than 50 Democrats fled to Illinois and New York, grinding business to a halt. Gene Wu, the chair of the Texas State House Democratic Caucus, explained why on CNN.
We really didn't have a choice. We tried to negotiate Republicans. We tried to talk to them. We tried to tell them that the public is very angry at what they're doing, and they simply wouldn't listen. This was the only way we could protect our constituents and protect the state.
Wu and his colleagues are already facing $500 daily fines for leaving the state. Now, Governor Abbott has taken the extraordinary step of ordering civil arrest warrants for the absent Democrats and has claimed he has the legal authority to strip them of their seats. Congressional maps are typically redrawn every 10 years, and the last redistricting took place in Texas just 4 years ago by a Republican-led committee. Abbott defended his plans to Fox on Monday and was pretty blunt about the political gains to be had.
Gerrymandering can be done, or drawing lines can be done, on the basis of political makeup, as in Republican versus Democrat, and there's nothing illegal about that.
He's technically right about that. Thanks to a 2019 Supreme Court ruling, federal courts do not have the authority to determine if a partisan gerrymander goes too far, meaning Texas can do just that so long as they secure the votes. On one level, this political drama is about tactics, and denying quorum is a Texas tradition dating back to the 1800s. Democrats have acted similarly during previous redistricting attempts, and they've always ultimately returned to vote, often because they simply lack the votes to overcome Republican majorities. Governor Abbott could keep calling sessions until he gets his way, and it would be hard for Democrats to avoid the state indefinitely. But this standoff has emboldened Democratic governors in other states to make threats of their own, and that could have major repercussions. Here's New York Governor Kathy Hochul.
I have news flash for Republicans in Texas. This is no longer the Wild West. We're not going to tolerate our democracy being stolen in a modern-day stagecoach hoist by a bunch of law-breaking cowboys. Americans don't want a system that's stacked against them.
She, along with Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, California Governor Gavin Newsom, and others, have vowed to explore redrawing their own maps in retaliation. They do face hurdles. Hochul would need to amend the state constitution, and Newsom would have to disband the state's independent commission currently responsible for redistricting. But state political leaders are now discussing manipulating laws in a way that could leave all future elections open to this kind of redrawing and fundamentally distort the electoral map of the United States. And there's really nothing much on a federal or judicial level to stop that from happening. David Daley from the nonpartisan group Fair Vote, which campaigns for voter reform, said the Supreme Court had made it very difficult to stop gerrymandering from escalating.
This is a national problem. It can't be fixed piecemeal state by state. And when the courts pulled themselves out of this, it really took away the last possibility of a neutral arbiter coming in and trying to enforce a standard. It's really difficult for politicians to end gerrymandering. They benefit from it. They like it.
Some states, like California, have commissions that are independent of the state legislature to make sure that politicians aren't the ones drawing or voting on new lines. But in an era of increased gerrymandering, more lawmakers could choose to abandon these kinds of measures and instead bear down for a fight. This next story is about encounters with ICE officials. Please be warned, there is some distressing audio of arrests. As immigration agents sweep the country making arrests in President Trump's crackdown, ICE claims its agents are using a minimum amount of force. But some videos of these arrests tell a different story.
Hell, hold on. I'm getting out.
That's the sound of ICE agents smashing in the car window of a father in Oregon who was driving his toddler to preschool when ICE detained him. Since Trump took office in January, ProPublica has documented close to 50 instances of breaking vehicle windows during arrests, though the government doesn't release data on this, so the exact number is hard to pin down. But use of force experts and former ICE insiders say this is unusual. ProPublica counted just 8 documented examples of such incidents over the last decade.
It just wasn't common practice because it was seen as so aggressive. It was a transgression of a line that we didn't all collectively know wasn't there. But seeing these videos, you see that something has changed.
That's reporter Mackenzie Funk. He says this trend is motivated by Trump's aggressive goal to deport 1 million people in his first year.
And in order to do that, I believe there's just so much pressure that they are breaking windows more often than they were before.
Now, it's not against the law for ICE to smash someone's car window during an arrest. Unlike your house, where an officer would need a warrant to enter, your car is in a kind of public space gray area, so there's more leeway. But these tactics are hurting people. At least 10 people have reported injuries in broken window arrests this year.
We had one person's lawyer told us that he had glass in his knee when he did an x-ray later. We have images of bloodied faces. We have heard of broken arms and concussions.
In several videos collected by ProPublica, children are crying out for their parents. Like during this arrest made in Maryland back in March, where you can hear the 15-year-old daughter of Elsie Noemi Berrios pleading with ICE agents as they prepare to smash the car window and detain Berrios.
You guys cannot take her just because you guys want
to. No te preocupes, Karen, no te preocupes. Tranquilo.
Honestly, this is the one that was gutting to me every time I watched it. You can hear the mother in Spanish calmly to her daughter saying, "Don't worry, baby. Don't worry. Everything's going to be okay."
ICE says Berrios was an affiliate of the gang MS-13. But the Department of Homeland Security has not provided evidence, and ProPublica's review of judicial records found no evidence of a criminal record. She is still in custody today. In response to ProPublica's reporting, DHS defended this tactic, and it said officers may break vehicle windows if the people they're trying to detain don't follow commands. Other agencies with officers involved in the incidents documented by ProPublica, including the FBI, DEA, and Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, did not respond or declined to comment. Now to tariffs. Starting on Thursday this week, many of the country's closest trading partners will face new tariffs from the Trump administration. More than 60 countries are set to be affected by a new rate starting at 10%, which will present industries with tough choices as they navigate these higher costs. Today, we're going to look at how one small country has already been impacted, Lesotho, a small African nation home to around 2.3 million people. It's facing a 15% tariff this week. But back in April, Trump threatened a 50% tariff, at that time the highest rate for any country in the world.
That's had a really, really profound impact on the people of Lesotho, especially the textile workers who don't make a lot of money.
Alexandra Wexler is an Africa corporate reporter for The Wall Street Journal.
The problem is that a lot of the damage has already been done. The threat of these 50% tariffs has dried up orders. Thousands of people have been laid off. And that's had a really dire effect on them and the economy as a whole.
Lesotho's textile industry heavily relies on exports to the U.S., which for 25 years have been duty-free through the African Growth and Opportunity Act enacted by Congress. The garment industry accounts for nearly 90% of industrial jobs in Lesotho, and the U.S. accounts for almost 20% of all its overseas sales, including to clothing brands like Reebok and Levi's and big retailers like Walmart.
Lesotho was sending a lot of stuff to the U.S. and not getting a lot of U.S. goods in, and that trade imbalance ended up sort of, as the trade minister told me, punishing them in an unexpected way.
By imposing these tariffs, Wexler reports that Trump appears to be sidestepping the African Growth and Opportunity Act. The law expires this year, and experts don't expect the Republican-controlled Congress to renew it. And top officials in Lesotho are concerned the economy there will continue to crumble, even at the lower 15% rate.
The trade minister, when I spoke to him, had said that he was pushing for 10% or even less, because he said that Lesotho would have a very tough time with anything over 10%. It would be near impossible to compete. So I think even with 15%, they're still going to be an impact.
Lesotho's government declared a state of disaster in July, which grants the government powers to reroute money to programs that help the economy, including waiving fees to register companies and creating a fund to support new businesses. One of the big questions now, Wexler says, is whether textile customers will return, and if they come back strong enough to allow Lesotho to rehire the thousands of people who've been left in limbo as tariff threats loom. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. In Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government unanimously voted to fire his attorney general, who is currently prosecuting Netanyahu for corruption charges. It's being seen as one of the most significant steps Netanyahu has taken in defying the judicial system in the country. And Axios reports that it's the first time an Israeli government has ever voted to oust an attorney general. The government denied that the firing is connected to the charges, but Netanyahu has faced accusations in the past that he has used legal tactics to delay the case. In the meantime, Israel's high court issued an injunction temporarily freezing the decision and barring the government from choosing a successor. To the U.S., where parts of the country will be filled with a smoky haze this week, Canada wildfire smoke will settle in the East Coast. Air quality alerts are in effect for a dozen or so states across the Northeast and Upper Great Lakes. Detroit and Chicago were among the top 10 worst cities for air quality in the world on Monday, according to one air quality tracker. It's coming from almost 200 fires that are burning out of control in what is likely to be Canada's second worst wildfire season on record. And finally, to a criminal enterprise wreaking havoc in Bali, snatching phones and other belongings in exchange for rewards. This network of criminals are, in fact, monkeys, long-tailed macaques to be precise. And the Wall Street Journal has this pretty amusing story about how they run rampant at a tourist destination temple. There, they steal various belongings from tourists and will only give them back when bribed with food. Researchers say that some monkeys have even worked out what items humans value most, targeting wallets and smartphones, knowing how to barter accordingly. A group of scientists who spent years filming and studying macaques described it this way. They said these monkeys have, quote, unprecedented economic decision-making processes. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Breakfast might have the reputation for being the most important meal of the day, but The New Yorker makes the case for why lunch deserves more respect than it gets. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.